Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. I am your host, John Scott. Thank you for joining me here on a rainy, crappy April 14th day. Tax day is tomorrow. I hope everybody has their stuff pulled together. I thankfully, at the last minute, got mine submitted yesterday, which was a huge relief because I am just a procrastinator at heart, and I waited until the last minute to get it done. And when I say I mean I paid someone a decent amount of money to do my taxes, so I was procrastinating just to get the information to them because I just didn't feel like it. It was sitting on my desk for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I just said, yeah. And then last week hit, and I sent a panic email to them saying, we gotta go, here's all my stuff. And it's not like I have one W-2. There's a lot of stuff they have to go through and all this stuff, but they managed to sift through all the receipts and garbage that I sent them, and now we are fully filed, and I expect to be audited within the calendar year, which will be very, very fun. You know what else is fun? I just got back a couple days ago from a charity event I did in Hamilton, Ontario for Hockey Helps the Homeless. I do a couple events with them a year, and it was a lot of fun. I obviously grew up in St. Catharines, for those of you who don't know, so it's just a quick jaunt down the QEW to Hamilton, so I spent a lot of time there as a kid. I actually tried out for the Hamilton Kilty Bees. When I was a kid, I got cut. They were a tier 2 team at the time. I don't know if the Kilty Bees are even still a thing, but I got cut from them. It's funny when I go home and everybody, they clue in that I grew up in the Golden Horseshoe, and they're like, whoa, where'd you play? Where'd you play? And then I have to go through and explain, well, I got cut from the St. Catharines Falcons. I got cut from the Kilty Bees. I didn't make, you know, this team or that team. So I had to go and, you know, play junior C in Grimsby. Then I wanted to play junior B with St. Catharines, and my hometown team didn't want me. So I went to Thorold. And then after Thorold, I, you know, went to Chicago. It just, it turns into this long drawn out conversation where I, you know, I could have just, I played for the St. Michael's Majors. That's who I got drafted by in the OHL. But anyways, long story short, I was in Hamilton, and at the draft, I was having a couple pops with the guys and the team I was drafted with. I got drafted number 2 overall. Darcy Tucker went 1, who, by the way, you know, Darcy Tucker, one of the nicest guys I've ever met. And I get to meet a lot of guys, thankfully. And some guys are great. Some guys are crap. Some guys are just, you know, average. Darcy Tucker is awesome. And I know maybe I say this a lot, but I had a great talk with him. Like, just a good time. I doubt he'll do the podcast because he works for the Leafs, and those guys, they get paid very well to work for their team, and I'm not dumping on them. I would love to have that gig where I just show up to the game, and every month they throw $30,000 at me. So, hey, more power to him. He deserves it. He's actually a guy who, like, left it all on the ice, so I can't crap on that. But, yeah, I was chatting with him. Awesome, awesome guy. Anyways, he went 1. I went 2. After the event was concluded, I was, you know, having a couple pops with my team. The team we were playing in the first game was on the next table to us, a bunch of railroad workers for the CN Railroad, which doesn't mean, like, all they do is just push a button these days and the trains drive themselves. So they thought their crap didn't stink, and they were just like, oh, we do this. And I'm like, buddy, you guys just push a button. Anyways, we started chirping back and forth, and they said, we're playing your first game. They're a bunch of young kids, 25, 30. My team, average age, 55. Not very athletic, not very skilled on the ice, I assumed. But I was confident in my skills, and I said, well, put your money where your mouth is, railroad drivers. Let's go. So we bet $100 on the first game, but I hedged my bet. I said, you need to give me 6 goals, because I just did the math in my head. Young kids, probably really good at hockey, probably got legs for days and lungs. Older guys, 55, who are already 6 or 7 beers deep. The game was at 8:30. I don't think the turnover time for them is very, very short, so they're going to be struggling to even make the game. Well, all of my assumptions were correct. I got to the game, and my team looks like death. And mind you, only half the team was at the draft, so it's not like all of them were like overserved the night before. But most of them, I was very nervous. So the game starts, and I immediately go down 7-1 in the first period. And I'm getting trash-talked by the opponents. They're skating by the bench going, one more to go, 2 more to go, that sort of thing. And it got a little aggravating. We finally get, you know, some puck luck, and we score a couple goals. But in the meantime, and keep in mind, this is a charity event for homelessness in Hamilton, Ontario. I am screaming at the referee. at 8:45 in the morning. Like, just, and not like a fun scream, like, come on, Stripes, let's go. Actively dressing him down, saying, you're a terrible referee. What are you looking at? And using some colorful language at the same time, where I'm not very proud of the things I said. Because he's just letting things go. Guy's holding my stick. I'm trying to jump up in the play, getting in my way. They had an egregious offside that ended up in a goal for them. And I am just livid. Because this is for $100 Canadian, keep in mind. So like $70 American. But I wasn't proud of myself. But I was intense. I wanted to win. And it's funny when you have those moments where you're playing for something, your instincts click in. And I was just like, I ain't losing this damn game. So I just stopped changing. The guys on my team got a little mad to the point where we would have a D-zone faceoff. And guys would start coming on the ice and saying, you need to get off the ice. And I would look at them and I would go, no. And they would have to skate back. And it created a little animosity in our locker room when the game was ended. But I had to remind them when I got back to the locker room, I said, guys, this is for $100. Like, this is my pride. I need to win this. So I almost shot myself in the foot. I was, you know, taking a 2-on-1 and I put my stick out, which defensemen should not do on a cross ice pass. Went off my stick into the net. They were up by 6 and I started to sweat in because they needed to win by 7. But luckily we got another one. I think we beat them. They beat us by 5 or 6. So I won $100. But I was gassed after that. Like, I completely just gassed out, but it got me thinking. And going into this past weekend, I was like, man, if I get that jacked up. And I did a lot of, you know, soul searching. Because I am screaming, cussing out these refs. You suck. You're a joke. You shouldn't be doing this. Mind you, they volunteered to take time out of their day, a Friday, to come in referee games for a charity. And here is a 6'8" jerk just tearing a strip off of him. And not for like 10 seconds. You guys, this was for like 25 minutes, constant. And then I tried after the game, you know, got a little heated out there. And they're just like, get out of here, buddy. But it got me thinking, if I can get that amped up at 40 plus years old for a charity game on a Friday morning in Hamilton, Ontario, how the hell can the Detroit Red Wings not get up for a game in April when their playoffs are on the line? That's what I don't understand, because that very night, the Detroit Red Wings were in a do-or-die game versus the New Jersey Devils. The New Jersey effing Devils. And they can't get up for the game? They can't hold the lead in the third period? You're up 3-2 with 13 minutes left. You can't hold a lead. You're up 2-1 in the second period and you can't hold the lead. You're up 1-0 midway through the first and you can't hold a lead or an extend on a lead. And I just laughed to myself because I said, this could not have worked out any better for me. This season, the trajectory of the Red Wings, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because I hate spiking the ball and say, I told you so. But how the season went was just perfect for me. Because early in the year, I think the first couple weeks, I said they will not make the playoffs. The Red Wings suck. The Iser plan is a scam. He doesn't know what he's doing. They're a boat without a rudder, and it's just going to end up in failure. And then they start winning. And then they get the goaltender in John Gibson before the season, and he puts up a historic run. Well, going like 16-2, just lights out. Cam Talbot was playing great. Patrick Kane was playing good. Everything was working. But if you really watch the game and you saw how the flow of the game went, you realize this is a paper tiger. This house of cards will fall down at some point. And so I was confident in myself and I held fast. I said, no, this team still sucks. Just wait. I said, going into the Olympic break, they were fourth in the Eastern Conference, firmly in a playoff spot. Just wait. Fast forward to now. Went through the Ides of March. We're midway through April. 2 or 3 games left in the regular season. And just like the sun rises in the east, the Detroit Red Wings are out of the playoffs again for the 10th straight year. They now have the longest tenured streak of not making the playoffs, currently sitting at 10 years. And if you look at this roster and you look at what they have in the cupboard and you look at their salary cap situation, there is no way, as a red-blooded human being, that you can tell me that they are going to make the playoffs next year and things are looking rosy for them. There was a point where I said, oh yeah, you know, I get it. You know, when he first took the helm a long time ago, they had a rough situation. They had like an abdicator, a Jimmy Howard, Darren Helm. They had Danny DeKeyser, Jonathan Erickson. This is the train wreck that Steve Yzerman took over. All bad salaries, all aging players, all making well more than their output. Well, that was 2019. That was 7 years ago. Now, when you look at this team and you look at the trajectory and where they're going, they got a couple good pieces. Mo Sider, Norris, worthy defenseman. Lucas Raymond, I like him. DeBrincat, he's fun. But boy, oh boy. It's like, I get it. Edvinson is good. You have some good pieces and some young players. I understand that. Emmett Finney's fun to watch. Marco Casper, he might turn into something. All these young kids that are going to show up. Augustine, the goaltender from Michigan State, he's going to be our savior. Gibson played Vezina-worthy this year, and he couldn't save you. The cupboard's bare now. You don't have a first-rounder this year. This is it. This is your team. Larkin, Sider, Raymond, DeBrincat, Falk. That's it. Kopp, Compher, Sherratt. Like, this team sucks. This team is atrocious. This team deserves where they are. And it made me feel good. Because I could go into all the, you know, and Steve Yzerman, he's made some good moves. You know, getting DeBrincat was good. Signing John Gibson this offseason was great. The draft of Mo Sider at number 6, widely panned. It's like, oh, what is he doing? It's terrible. It's worked out pretty good. But then there's other ones like Patrick Kane. He wanted to go to Detroit. That was it. There was no other option. Even the DeBrincat signing. DeBrincat, the Ottawa Senators had a better offer from the Anaheim Ducks. But DeBrincat said, I only am going to re-sign in Detroit. And Anaheim wanted him to do an extension before they traded for him. And DeBrincat said, no, I'm going to Detroit. That's it. There's no other place I'm going. So he pretty much made that trade happen. So for Yzerman to get kudos for that, I get it. But it was more the player. But bad stuff, the Jake Walman debacle, signing Justin Hall and Ben Sherratt to these terrible contracts, getting vets that don't really work out, Tarasenko, JVR, those types of guys. Kopp, Compher, woof. Not shoring up the center position. And then it being exposed this year at the most critical time when Larkin and Kopp are both gone and you're looking at your center depth and you go, sheesh, this ain't good. That's a GM's job. That's a GM's job. You should be prepared for the worst situation. Letting Filip Ronek go. I know you got a first for him, but he's looking pretty good. Shane Gostisbehere looking pretty good in Carolina. Guy's a point-per-game defenseman, for Pete's sake. He's unbelievable. Let him walk. Let Walman walk for nothing. He ends up getting a first rounder from the San Jose Sharks. Like, I get GMs, they have good and bad moves. And I think overall, Steve Yzerman probably ends up on the plus side of things when you look at all his acquisitions and players he let go. But, the runway is done, bud. Like, that's it. The Yzer plan, you went from a full rebuild to restocking the cupboard. Now we're competing and we still suck. And just imagine if John Gibson doesn't have that incredible season where he was on Vezina trajectory and just playing lights out for a month and a half, 2 months. What happens then? All the advanced analytics that I hate, that you love, and everybody just has in all these fancy feelings for, maybe you don't love them. I don't know. I like them when they work for me. When they don't work for me, I hate them. But they said Detroit was a crappy team. Where do you go from here? Dylan Larkin, he ain't getting any younger. Mo Sider, that was probably the best he'll ever play, maybe. Played fantastic. Lucas Raymond, is he worth the $8 million? I don't know. They had all pretty good years, and they still missed the playoffs. So I'm just – for all of you who said in December, January, February, you dumb goon, you dumb goon, you don't know what you're talking about. Oh, you play, all you did was fight, you get punched in the head too much. All you Red Wings fans, just suck it hard. You know what I mean? That's it. I was right. And I knew I was right all along. And I'm a very, I don't want to say I told you so or any congratulations, but suck it hard, baby. Yes. Detroit has missed the playoffs again for the 10th straight year. I'm very happy about it. I'm very, very happy about it. Stevie Yzerman. And this is the funny part about this. So I was expecting him to be gassed, fired right away, just like Toronto got rid of Tree Living. I was expecting Detroit to come out and say, you know what? It's been a good run. Steve had a vision. He did not, you know, get there, but we appreciate his tenure. He'll be a legend and always be welcome at Little Caesars Arena. Jersey's hanging in the rafters, I think. It should be. But we're going to part ways at this point. Nah, it didn't happen. Didn't happen. He's aligned with ownership moving forward. So whatever that means, but apparently him and the owners have some kind of alignment and they have a path forward and he will remain with the team forever, which I am so happy for. I am so happy to have this conversation again next year. Everybody will be excited. Everybody will want to prove me wrong. And then fast forward to April and I will go, suck it. The Red Wings suck again, and they are missing the playoffs once more. And this guy, like, I don't know, all the smoke being blown up is behind. I've ran into him a few times, and he knows what I say, and he doesn't like me, but he's a draft wizard. Buddy, he hit on Mo Sider. That's about it. He's drafted in the top 10 a bunch of times. And yes, okay, Mo Sider was an outside pick, but when you look at the 2020 draft with Lucas Raymond, it was Byfield, Stützle, Lafreniere, Lucas Raymond, Jake Sanderson, like pretty legit stars for the top 5-6. That was a loaded draft. So there was no missing on that one. When you look at the 2021 draft, it was the same kind of deal. They got Simon Edvinson at 6. There was Luke Hughes, Matty Beniers, Owen Power, William Eklund went right after, Brant Clark. Like solid, solid NHL talent in the top 10. Could he have missed? Maybe. But there's a lot of good players. It's not like he's drafting 20th and hitting home runs like they did in Tampa Bay, which was incredible. So anyways, I don't want to spend any more time on this. I will say I'm very happy. I'm a very happy camper. And I just want to say before we move on to my next topic, the Central Division, the Philadelphia Flyers got into the playoffs last night with a gritty shootout win versus the Carolina Hurricanes. And Carolina was, you know, not dressing everybody, rightfully so. They've earned their spot, their first place in the Eastern Conference, so they let a couple guys breathe. But Philly looks good, man. They look like they're energetic. They look young. They look fast. And I don't know how it matches up right now who they play in the playoffs. Currently, they're third in the Metro, so right now they would play the Pittsburgh Penguins in the first round, and that would be a hell of a series. But I don't think I want to play this team. I really don't. They're young. They have physical aspects. They got some talent. Their defense is okay. I like Dan Vladar. I think he played really solid last night. I don't know if he's their starter going into the playoffs, but he played absolutely lights out. I don't follow the Flyers too closely, but I watched that game, and man, yeah, pretty good team. They've been on a tear the last 10, I think 7-3, so look out. There are, and obviously the East is so deep, there are some teams in the East that you could wake up, and it'll be May Eastern Conference Finals, and you go, damn, like it's Ottawa Philly in the Eastern Conference Finals? It's kind of fun. It can happen. The East is super, super deep, and the teams at the top, I don't trust. Like the Hurricanes, they have a history of faltering, of not winning in the Eastern Conference Finals or even getting there. The Buffalo Sabres haven't been there in a decade and a half, and Tampa Bay are just a bunch of goons. So who knows? It's going to be interesting. All right, moving on. We're going to move west, and I've got a lot of requests for this because in my Patreon. By the way, if you're not a part of my Patreon, you're missing out. It's a lot of fun. So check it out. I put it in the, well, not every time when I edit these episodes, I try to remember to put it in the link in the description. It's $5 a month. That's it. It's like one coffee. Just give it to me. If 10,000 of you do that, That's $50,000 a month for me. Just do the math. Just do it for me. I don't ask for much, but I'm asking for this. Anyways, moving on. Last week, I got a pretty neat segue into this one. We were at our house, and it was around like 7 p.m. And this has never happened before, but I live kind of on the top of a hill. It's a nice spot. And we have windows in the back, windows in the front. Not outrageous windows, but windows. Everybody says windows. And we see turkeys walking in my backyard. And we're like, cool. And, you know, turkeys, I didn't know this, but I talked to some hunters. They are the hardest animal to kill, apparently. They have good hearing. They're fleet-footed. They can just kind of shift around. One thing I did not know about turkeys, and I thought they were like chickens where they could fly a little bit, and that was it. You know, maybe get a 10-foot spurt, a 15-foot spurt, and that's it. We were sitting there in my living room, and all the kids, I'm like, go to the windows. Look at, there's like three turkeys right here, full-size ones. It's cool. Now, you know, I know they're not an exotic animal, but they were close. My kids were excited. So all of a sudden, and dusk is starting, the sun's gone down, so it's getting a little dark. These turkeys jump and then fly, and I'm not even kidding, 35 feet straight up into a tree. The tree's obviously tall, and they just go for it. Boom, one, boom, two, boom, three. And then they systematically work their way up the tree. And this is right in my backyard, and I live at the top of the hill, so the tree is down the bank, probably 20 feet. So the turkeys are almost eye level with us by the time they get to where they're sleeping. And then they just pick a branch and they just sleep there. And it was just so cool to watch, so beautiful. And then I happened to be up in the morning getting wood for the fire. And it was around like 5:36. And the sun was just cresting over the peninsula. Beautiful. It was like a Jackson Pollock painting. No, he was the one who threw shit on the painting, right? It was like a Claude Monet. No, he was that guy who did the squiggly face. Like a beautiful landscape. I can't remember. I used to work at a shop in St. Catharines called the Calendar Club. Ann Geddes. It was like an Ann Geddes painting. And these turkeys, I stirred them and they shifted. And I tell you what, it was one of the most majestic, beautiful things I'd seen in a while. They jumped from up top of the tree and just glided down. Glided, all three of them, through the trees, through the canopy, and just safely landed on the ground. It was very cute. It was very cool. Brought a tear to my eye, almost. But it was awesome, and it was just a beautiful thing. And to transition that to hockey, the Central Division is a beautiful division right now. When you look at hockey as a whole and how things have gone this season, the one thing that has been a constant has been the Central Division. The Avalanche, the Stars, and the Wild in particular have put on an absolute clinic this season. And I think we're not doing it the justice as it deserves. We're doing it a disservice by not talking about it because it's just not fun, maybe in a way, because the Avalanche have just been on a hot streak the whole season. They haven't really faltered a little bit. There was a time in February where they came down to earth a little bit and they lost a couple in the row, but that was it. But I remember at the beginning of the season, I think they went 30-2 to start the season. Dallas has managed to maintain a spitting distance of Colorado without the whole season, even though they've been dealing with injuries up and down their roster. And the Minnesota Wild, lo and behold, are right there with them too. So I'm going to spend a little time to talk about the Central Division. And this comes from the Patreon because there's a lot of Central Division fans in there, a lot of Dallas, not a lot of Colorado, but they're like, give us some love. We don't get much love and we're the best teams in the NHL. And I have to agree with them. If you put any one of these teams in any other division, especially in any other conference, they're at the top of the ranks, especially, well, obviously the Pacific, that division sucks. But if you put any one of Colorado, Dallas, or Minnesota in the Metro or in the Atlantic, I think they're the best team in that division. But it just so happens this year, the way the cards fell, these three teams are in the same division and they're battling for playoff positions and they're going to end up playing each other in the first two rounds, like it or lump it. This is where we're at. But let's look at the three teams. Colorado. And I'm just going to focus on, and you can compare this to other teams. If you'd like, and see if your GM or your organization is doing everything it can to win, because you have this argument, and I'll compare it to Detroit. We just talked about them. Steve Yzerman did not dip his toe in free agency waters very much. And when he did, it was an abject failure for the most part. But his philosophy was, we will build through the draft. We will build on the back end. We will get good goaltenders and defense. I agree with that. But what he did not do, he did not trade. He did not sign guys in free agency very often, high-end guys, and he did not do much at the deadlines. He got Justin Falk this year, but other than that, he was a seller. Even when they were on the bubble, he was a seller. And then you compare that to other teams who were trying to win, who were trying to get better, trying to win the Stanley Cup. It's a stark contrast. And I know they're at different points in their development, and but look at the Minnesota Wild. They had no salary cap 3 years ago, 2 years ago, and now they're a Stanley Cup contending team who just went out and got Quinn Hughes, and they got Kirill Kaprizov, and they have a plethora of other stars. Let's start with the Colorado Avalanche, the best team in hockey. Hands down. You know, head and shoulders above the rest. Dallas is the second best team in hockey. Colorado is, I don't want to say light years ahead of them, because Dallas has injuries and they've been dealing with them pretty solidly all season, but they're the best team right now. They go out at the deadline and they get Nazem Kadri. They get Nicholas Waugh. How do you win Stanley Cups? Strength down the middle. That's it. Kadri, Waugh, both play center. Back end, they go out and get two serviceable defensemen. They already have a solid top four, so they didn't need to reinvent the wheel there. They got Taves, they got Makar, they got Manson, they got Burns. It's a pretty good top four. A little bit of everything with those guys. They go out and get a Brett Kulak and a Nick Blankenberg. Like, who's Nick Blankenberg? He's a solid defenseman. Solid defenseman. Last year, they had an issue. Mikko Rantanen, he wanted superstar money. And he wasn't willing to take anything less. He knew his value. I know my value. I know my worth. And he wanted his money. Well, Colorado, they have a lot of high-end players, and they were not going to be painted into a corner and look up and they go, oh, sheesh, we got five guys making $12 million, and we got no flexibility. We can't do anything. So what did they do? They gassed them. They shipped them out. They said, we're going to make this work. And when you look at the actual trade, since the trade, you know, Mikko Rantanen is a special player. Gosh, I was watching him last night. He's so funny in the D-zone. He doesn't even try. Maybe it's the end of the year, but I know he tries when there's something on the line, but he was just floating around. He did not care whatsoever. I think they were playing Toronto. It was just that game, I'm not going to get into that, but Dallas ends up winning 6-5. Toronto sucks so bad. They're so defensively deficient. They have no clue how to play defense. None. At all. Like, it's laughable to watch how they take a rush, play in zone defensively. The forwards are just checked out. I was just sitting down with, it was neat because you get to sit down at these events. So I'm going to go back to charity, talking with Darcy Tucker and Dave McElwain and a couple other Toronto alums. And they're just like shaking their heads. Like, I just don't know what they're doing. And they're like, just watch Willie Nylander, watch him in a game and how he plays defense and how he tries. And I did. And it's very comical. And they were very spot on. Willie will go out to front the defenseman. And the D-man will have the puck. They'll go D to D or whatever. They can hide a low. They'll maybe take a shot. A forward is supposed to front and then stop. You know, you're not supposed to go too close to defensemen, especially nowadays, because they'll juke you. They want you to rush them. Willie will rush at the defenseman, and instead of completing his hit or just marking him, he just does a flyby and hopes that someone on his team gets the puck and he gets a breakaway. He does it every time. It's so funny to watch. But anyways, back to Mikko Rantanen. He has played 70 games since the trade for the Colorado Avalanche, from the Colorado Avalanche, excuse me, combined with Carolina and Dallas. He's got 72 points. Colorado gets Martin Nichas back, Nachos, Nichas. He's played the same amount of games. He's gotten more points, 74. They got Jack Drury. He's played 67 games. He's gotten 20 points. With the money they saved from Mikko Rantanen, they were able to sign Brock Nelson. And he's not lighting up the scoreboard, but he's a serviceable forward. He's plus 16. He's got 35, 40 points in 53 games. And he's just a calming factor back there, where he goes and wins a gold medal. He was a huge part of that team for USA. So he's a stud player. So you lose Rantanen, you get Nachos, putting up the same amount of points. You get a Jack Drury who kind of fills in that third, fourth line role. And then you get a Brock Nelson, who is an incredible vet who does a little bit of everything. He's a big body player and he shows up when you need him the most. So when you look back, you're upset that you lose Mikko Rantanen. He was obviously part of the core, won the Stanley Cup with them, but they did pretty damn good. They got a balanced forward group, strong down the middle. They got McKinnon, Landeskog up front. You got Makar, Taves, like I said, Burns on the back end. 40 games, first 40 games in the season, they had two regulation losses. I think I said 30. And what that means to me is when I played for good teams, lose one maybe, lose two, sometimes lose three in a row, never. That's the goal, is to not go on these big losing streaks. Good teams strive for that. You nip them in the butt. You don't get those bad feelings. When we had Tage Thompson on the beginning of the season, he said it sucks to lose. You get in this funk, and it's hard to get out of. Connor Garland said the same thing. You learn to lose. You find ways to lose. And this team doesn't do that. They find ways to win. Their longest losing streak of the season is four. And by the way, of those four losses, three of them went to overtime or a shootout. So they're still getting 3 points out of a possible eight. That's the worst it's gotten for the Colorado Avalanche in 81 games so far. They lead the league in goals, four. Next closest is Pittsburgh. I think they're 10 behind. Oh, when they lead the league in goals against. So they have the best offensive team, best defensive team. That's not really abnormal, because typically when you have the puck, it's hard to get scored on. And these guys are absolutely, they're fantastic. All right, let's move on. Dallas Stars, dealing with a lot of injuries this season. Tyler Seguin goes down. Mikko Rantanen missing some time. Roope Hintz has missed some time. He hopefully will be back for the playoffs. Jamie Benn has missed some parts of the season. Bischel went down for 8 weeks early in the season. Right now, I think Bastion's out. Sam Steele's, I think he was back. Michael Bunting, Radek Faksa. A lot of their depth has been out, but they're still winning. And it's giving young guys time to flourish, time to play. I was watching the game recently. Maverick Bourque has played lights out. He had a hat trick last night versus the Leafs, which is not saying much, but still a hat trick is a hat trick. The Oscar Beck, R2 Hero, and then this is going to be a butcher of a name, but this Justin Haikowekawayan, he's playing solid, man. And with the injuries, with the veterans going down, with high line guys going down, first, second line guys going down, it's opening up opportunities for these guys to go and play big time minutes with big time line mates. That's the one thing that is such a blessing when you, I know injuries suck, but when a Tyler Seguin goes down or a Roope Hintz goes down, you need a guy to play with a Robertson and a Wyatt Johnson. You need a guy to go play with a Matt Duchene. And if I'm a Maverick Bourque or an Oscar Beck or a R2 Hero or whatever, Hyrie, that's invaluable. You get to step in and play with these guys and hone your skills and show the GM and really feel what it takes to be a first-line guy. I remember when I was in Chicago, Q would put me on the first line if, you know, we were up a little bit, even if it was tied. But as a punishment for the first-line guys, it's amazing, absolutely amazing what it's like to play with world-class skill players. They put the puck right where you need it. Even where you don't think you need it, it ends up and you're like, damn, that was probably better than where I wanted it. And then you're constantly just moving because you want to, you know you can score every shift. So it ups your energy level. Like, okay, we're not just going to chip and chase. We're going to control the puck. We're going to, you know, go wide and pull up and try to find the trailer and I'll be back door and someone will actually get me the puck if I'm in the right spot. It makes you want to try harder. Makes you want to get to that spot. So for these guys, especially Maverick Bourque, damn, what an opportunity, what a chance. And then obviously the GM, Jim Nill, sees this and he goes, okay, well, maybe I don't need to re-sign Mikko Rantanen because I know I have these guys who can play in that position. So obviously they re-signed Rantanen to 8 years, but it just gives you other options. So it's been a blessing in disguise for the Dallas Stars going into the playoffs because now they know they have depth. They know they have guys they can rely on. And when those guys go back down to the third line and the fourth line, when the veterans get healthy, when the Roope Hintz comes back, when the Jamie Benn comes back and they fill out their top two lines, it's like, sheesh, we got a dangerous top four, man. Like, we got a dangerous top four. The big move they made at the deadline was getting Tyler Myers. An insider said they had sniffed around, kicked the tires at Radko Gudas. I'm glad they didn't get him. Tyler Myers is a hell of a defenseman. They paired him up with Bishnell, and those guys are massive. They can cover the whole ice. And Myers is, he's hungry. He has never been in the playoffs. I think he's been in the playoffs 1 year in his 15, 16 year NHL career. Buffalo forever, goes to Vancouver. They had one good season. Then it's just been terrible. So he is jacked up. He's excited. They got Wyatt Johnson. He could be the best player on the team. I know Jason Robertson's having a great season, and Rantanen's there, and Heiskanen's there, and, you know, Harley's there, and Matt Duchene's there, and all these other players are there, but Wyatt Johnson leads the league in power play goals. I think he set the record this year, 26, 27, 28 at this point. He had a good year last year, 71 points in 82 games. You guys, he's going to be over a point per game. Wyatt Johnson, I think he's a second rounder. And the thing with him that I noticed is now he initiates. You know, I think last year and prior years, I think this is his third year, he would defer, rightfully so. He's a young player. Now he doesn't. He's so fun to watch. He gets the puck in the neutral zone and the D zone. He just weaves his way through traffic. He's a great guy in the power play. He's pretty much, he gets you in the zone every single time. Like, that's it. He's your breakout play. Give it to Wyatt and let him just beetle through everybody. But yeah, he doesn't defer. He shoots. He wants the puck. And the crazy stat, he's never missed a game in his career. Four straight 82-game seasons. It's incredible. And this is the big stat. This is what I think will separate Dallas and Colorado. And I do think Dallas would come out of the West. Colorado's power play, 27th. Dallas, second. And when you get to the playoffs, everybody ups their compete level a little bit. We have seen it year after year after year. The difference makers is the special teams. Can you kill penalties? Can you score that opportune goal on the power play? Because you will get chances. You're going to get 3, 4, 5 power plays a game. Can you convert on 2 of them? And if you can do that, you will most likely win the game. And Dallas has shown they can do that. They have a lethal power play. And for whatever reason, Colorado, it cannot figure it out. They can't put it together. 27th is not good. And so that is going to be a big difference maker in that, if inevitably they do meet up. All right. Last but certainly not least, the Minnesota Wild. Obviously, what can you say about Billy Guerin? He was handcuffed forever with the Suter and Parisi dead money issue. The handcuffs get taken off of him, and he swings for the fences, signs the biggest player, not even signs, trades for Quinn Hughes. Like, that's it. There's no other thing you can say about him. He has done everything he can to make this team better. He was kicking the tires on everybody at the deadline. He was trying to make this team better, and he did everything he could. And you compare that to a Steve Yzerman, another former player, a guy in a prominent position going back to his hometown team to be the GM, and you look at what Billy Guerin has done with the Minnesota Wild. It's like, damn, you know, it's pretty good. He goes out and get Michael McCarron. He's been a great addition to this team, a big body, 6'6" moose of a man, adds some sandpaper. He gets Nick Foligno's or Marcus Foligno's brother, Nick Foligno, figure it out, John. But he's just doing whatever he can to try to make this team work. They have some good, solid goaltenders in Wallstedt. He had a good run this year for a rookie. They got Gustafson, who's been lights out. Will they win the first round? I don't think so. But you can't fault him for trying. I think they're a couple pieces away. I still think they need a centerman. Right now, their center depth is not there. I've been screaming it from the rooftop for days and days and years and forever and ever. They're not there yet. When you talk to people in the Minnesota organization, they understand that. But first-line centers don't grow on trees. And he was kicking the tires on a couple guys in with the New York Islanders. He was trying to, you know, pry them out. But there's only so much you can give away. You know, he's traded a lot of his prospects, a lot of his draft picks, and this is where they're at, which is not a terrible spot. Like I said at the top of this little segment here, if they're in the Pacific, they're in the Metro, if they're in the Atlantic, they're the best team in that division and conference. Like, there's no if, ands, or buts about that. I've watched them play live a couple times this season, and when they put that 5-man unit out of Faber and Hughes and Zuccarello and Kaprizov and Ryan Hartman at the time, but Matt Boldy will slide in there, or Eriksson Ek, one of the two, they're a dangerous team. They're creative. They're fun to watch. They're energetic. I just don't see them competing, and it's a shame the way the playoffs work out. And, you know, I go back and forth on this. Oh, we should go 1-8. This, that, and the other. Then we would complain about having terrible first-round matchups. So this is it. This is it. We went through this with the Atlantic for 5-6 years with Toronto and Tampa Bay and Boston. This is the Central Division's turn right now. They'll play the Dallas Stars in the first round. It's already locked in. That's unfortunate. You're just going to run into a juggernaut, and you will be bounced in the first round. And the same will be said for Dallas versus Colorado in the second round. It is what it is. That's the way the playoffs are shaking out right now, but They're a hell of a team, and they will get better this offseason. Billy Guerin will not sit on his hands. He will go, he will push, and he will try to make this team better. But moving on, the playoffs are set. There's no shakeups that will happen. The Flyers, Penguins, Hurricanes are the top three in the Metro. The Canadiens, Lightning, and Sabres are the first top three in the Atlantic. The Lightning and Sabres could flip-flop. The Canadiens and Lightning could flip-flop. It's still a lot to play for, home ice advantage. The Ottawa Senators and the Bruins could flip-flop. Which team wants to play the Hurricanes? Which team wants to play the Sabres? That's an interesting question. If you're the Bruins and the Senators, who would you rather play? The Buffalo Sabres, the upstart Sabres, or the Carolina Hurricanes? Who, by the way, I don't trust them at all. I think if I would pick a first-round upset for a number one seed, it's Carolina, hands down. I know they're consistent. They play Carolina hockey. They limit shots against. They just bombard the other team with shots. They're unrelenting. I still don't think they have an elite goal scorer. It's not that I don't think they do. They don't have an elite goal scorer. And their goaltending situation is a mess. They have three okay options. Brendan Bussey, Freddie Anderson, and then Peter Kuk, Kachetkov. I don't know who starts game one of the playoffs. That is not a good scenario to be under. So if I'm a team in the wild card position, I think I'd rather play the Carolina Hurricanes or the Buffalo Sabres. Buffalo's going to be so excited. First game of the playoffs. Seems like they shot out of a cannon. And on the other end, in the Western Conference, the Kings and Mammoth have clinched. Anaheim Ducks, Oilers, Knights in the Pacific, and then obviously the Wild Stars, Avalanche in the Central. This is pretty much just going to be a bloodbath from the Central. Those guys are going to kill each other. And you know who benefits from this? It's going to be the first place team from the Pacific, because they will roll into the Western Conference Finals having not played any of those teams yet. And the Avalanche or the Stars, if in my eyes, the Stars make it to the Western Conference Finals, they're going to get beat to hell versus the Wild, and they're going to line up versus the Avalanche, and they're just going to do the same versus them, and then they're going to limp into the Western Conference Finals versus the Golden Knights, versus the Edmonton Oilers, and they're going to be looking pretty fresh because they're going to get to play. Like the Oilers will play the Ducks and then the Knights. Buddy. It's like a pillow fight, like Connor McDavid said. So anyways, it's going to be interesting. The teams are set. The playoffs start next week. It's going to be exciting. I am in the finals of my fantasy hockey game right now, and I'm winning by quite a bit. And you want to know how stupid I am? I thought it was a standard two-week bracket because, you know, the semifinals were 2 weeks. So I gassed a lot of my good players because I wasn't going to use them Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then lo and behold, I see people picking them up, and I go, why? Like, you're not playing them. Well, it went 2.5 weeks. So now we're into, what is it now? Tuesday. It's Wednesday, Thursday. So they get another week worth of my guys. I'm just like, shit, I really dropped the ball on that one. But I'm still winning. Still playing great. Not worried about it. I think I'm up by 60 or 70, maybe 80 points. There's only a couple days left, and everybody's getting sat anyway. So this time next week, I will be crowning myself champion of my fantasy hockey league. It'll be very exciting. And I will gloat on here like I always do when I probably shouldn't. But anyways, thank you for listening, everybody. I hope you enjoyed the show. We're going to have Billy Ranford, Stanley Cup goaltender of the Edmonton Oilers, on the show. I'm going to ask him about what the hell, like, what do the Oilers do? Because he's been in that position playing on a super skilled team when you have world-class talent in front of you, and all you have to do is just show up and save the easy ones, and you'll win a Stanley Cup. And the same situation can be said for Tristan Jarry. What the pressure is like, what he's going through, and what he needs to do. Because I think Billy works for the LA Kings right now. So it'll be an interesting conversation. They're over in the playoffs, all of that fun stuff. So yeah, keep an eye out for that. And we will talk to you later. Cheers, everybody.